Welcome to Flip the Script, a mental health podcast. I'm your host, Jana Cohn. Whether you know the darkness of depression yourself or have supported someone in their pain, you've come to the right place. My mission is to empower you to take control of your mental health because nothing else in this entire world matters more. If you're listening in the midst of depression right now, I hope this show gives you assurance that you are not alone and that life doesn't have to be so hard. But you must first desire to feel better and get better. This podcast is a step in the right direction. If you're listening because you're walking alongside someone dealing with depression, thank you. You can always find me on Instagram at jana.cohn and be sure you're subscribed to my email list in the show notes so you never miss an episode. Together, we can flip the script on mental health. Enjoy. Welcome back to Flip the Script. Today, I am so excited to bring Jess on. She is with Encode Wellness, and you're going to learn all about what she does and the incredible business she has built. But I am so excited to have you on, Jess, and just have a conversation about a topic that I feel like our generation strays away from, and a topic that no one really wants to confront until they are confronted with it. And we're going to get into everything I mean about that. But welcome, Jess. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I love this opportunity, and I am really excited to have the chance to talk about a subject that, you're right, no one wants to talk about. So it's kind of cool to have a captive audience for a little while.
Yes. And just to give you all a little bit of background on how I got connected with Jess through Instagram, of course. And if you have been following me for any length of time, I have shared over the past several months about my great aunt. Her name is Alaire. Everyone loves her name when I share that. But my great aunt Alaire, she is 83 years old, and she has what would be considered a very severe type of dementia. And her husband has passed, and she has no children. And so I, as her great niece, have taken on this caregiver type role. And my dad, who is her nephew, also helps me in caring for her, but he has his own parents. And so I have kind of stepped into this caregiver role for my great aunt and was totally thrown into this whole new world of dementia and Alzheimer's that I had no clue about. Of course, I had heard of it. I knew what an awful disease it is. I have had friends who have experienced it. But when you walk through it with a loved one and you see how just incredibly destructive the disease is. And when I say destructive, I mean I was blown away at how quickly our brains, and seeing it living out in my aunt's life, how quickly our brains can just decline. Mm-hmm. It honestly scared me. And so I was sharing about this on my social media, and you know, I'm 35 years old. Most caregivers, when they start caring for a parent or older relative, are, let's say, our parents' age right now in their 50s or 60s. And so I'm definitely the youngest caregiver that goes to visit my aunt in her memory care home. And I felt so overwhelmed in thinking, oh my God, is this what I am destined for? Because you read that dementia and these similar issues are genetic. And it is so scary. And so I was sharing this on my social media, and one of my friends, Felicia, who I've met through Instagram, messaged me and said, "I have to connect you with my friend Jess. We went to high school together. I don't think I've seen her since high school,
No.
but she has made this whole realm her life's purpose. And that's how I found you, Jess. So can you just tell us a little bit about you and how you landed into this new category and season of life?"
Yes. Well, first, I have to say, I think, we can ding Instagram and social media for so many things, but I love how it brings connections that we thought we had lost years ago back, and the world works in really beautiful ways sometimes and gives you exactly what you need. So, I don't believe in coincidences. This is a cool conversation to have. And yes, first, I would just want to say my heart goes out to you and anyone that is listening to this who is caretaking. It is a emotionally and physically and often financially draining experience. And often caretakers suffer their own risk factors just from going through it. So my heart goes out to you and to everyone else that's dealing with it. And that's actually, in a way, how I got into this. I've not been in brain health my entire career. I actually spent about 18 years with the Defense Department, and I worked alongside some of our most elite military units working overseas. And my last position was actually as a diplomat in Colombia. And I was away from my mom for a while, and I remember, we didn't see each other as often as we used to, but we started to talk, and I knew that my grandparents had been getting sick for a while, and I didn't really know that much about Alzheimer's or dementia. I knew what a lot of us know, which is, oh yeah, they're getting old, and oh, surprise, memory's starting to go. Yeah, we just gotta deal with it. And they were in their 80s at the time, but I noticed that my mom started to also go downhill. And as they got closer to the end of their lives, she really started to decline quickly. And it was scary. When I saw her, I ended up getting married while I was in Colombia. And I remember, talking to her months and months before, and we were excited and we were celebrating. And then she got there for the wedding, and it was like a different person. And she kind of just didn't seem like she was there. She kind of sat like she was in a really boring event, and she just wasn't there. It was not the same. And we fast forward 6 months later, and she tells me, she said, "I've got MCI. I've been told that I have mild cognitive impairment, and I'm gonna get Alzheimer's. This is early Alzheimer's. The doctor has said, you're on the fast track." Fortunately, my mom is stubborn as they come, and she has a healthcare background, so she immediately said, "This is bullshit. I'm not gonna put up with this. There has to be a solution. I just watched my parents deteriorate and pass away from this disease, and I do not accept that there is nothing that can be done." And thank God for that. For that attitude that she has always had.
Amen.
And she began her research and discovered that, there is a doctor out there who has done some really interesting research. He and his colleagues have done some really interesting research, and he has basically explained how the disease works and what we can do about it. And it's not hopeless. There is something that we can do. And I remember at the time, I just thought, great, cool, what do we have to do? And I got into this because I am her only child. So this is, it's not like we have a stable of brothers and sisters back home to be part of this. And she said, yeah, so I have to do this, I have to do a special diet. I have to detox my body. I have to, remediate the mold in my house. And it sounded like this massive undertaking. And, she was doing this all from a distance. And eventually she said, I can't do this. Like, this is too much when you already have, when you're already suffering and you're already really unable to continue some of the functions of daily living, you can't do all of this. She said, what would be amazing is if I had some help. Now, I was a diplomat in Colombia. I had no intention of changing careers, but life happens. And as it turns out, it was the perfect time for me to look at a different path because I had just become, or I was about to become a mother to my daughter. And suddenly, as anyone who's become a parent realizes that your priorities shift, family and taking care of your family, both the ones before you and after you, becomes the most important thing. So I dropped everything and switched. And I've spent the last 5 years studying this disease and figuring out how to make the science of it accessible.
Jess, tell me this. How old was your mom when you said she came to Colombia? Was it for the wedding? And you could tell something was off. What was her age at that time?
She was 65. Yeah.
Wow. That is very early onset.
Yes.
And when you say that she seemed like a different person, like she was there, but she wasn't there. How would you describe that? What were some things that you picked up on, particularly, if you can remember?
There are lots of different kinds of dementia, and they do present differently. But you just notice that the person that you've always known isn't the same. There is just a change in their energy, a change in that interaction that you get with them. For some people, it can come across as amnestic, or you're not remembering things, you're starting to repeat yourself. But others, it's truly a personality shift. And with my mom, I wasn't around her every day to know whether she was repeating herself. But I noticed the personality was different. She was not her upbeat, her, enthusiastic, her, happy for me. It wasn't like she was coming to the wedding of her daughter. It was like she may as well have been coming to a funeral. She was kind of, eh, I'm just sort of dazed.
Like a
And dazed
child.
is one of those personality changes. If someone goes from being engaged and full of life and happy to be there and part of the conversation to being withdrawn and kind of self-isolating, that's worth taking note. And that's what I noticed.
Do you think, you said that she later told you that she had been diagnosed with, what was the acronym you said, mild?
Mild cognitive impairment.
Okay.
It's
Do you think that she was worried about telling you? Do you think she held
a
that
great
for a
question.
little bit?
I'm sh absolutely. I have never actually thought about that, but absolutely. She never told me that she was going through any of this. None of the testing, none of the, concern. I found out about this late in the process, and I think a lot of people do. That's actually one of the bigger, that's the big picture, right? Is that nobody talks about this. Even my mother, who was the first person to raise her hand and say, I need help, and my grandfather was the same. He in his 70s said, something's not right. These are people that are have no ego about it. They are ready to get help. And even they waited really long. And we have this stigma about cognitive decline in this country, that it's some judgment on our intellect, And it's just not true. Every single one of us has a risk, some of us more than others. But she absolutely hid it from me. She hid it from everyone because there's a stigma, there's a shame about admitting that your brain isn't working right.
Yeah.
So people don't, and they wait.
I put myself in her shoes when you were explaining that and how she had seen her parents go through it. And then she's thinking, oh my gosh, this is gonna happen to me.
Yeah.
And then trying to figure out, okay, what, if anything, can I do? And then she probably also, a very self-protective part, knew that if and when she shared it with you, which she did, that what she was currently going through, having just cared for her parents, was going to be your future. And yeah. It is this constant cycle. And right now, as I'm caring for my great aunt, my parents have said to me a few times, well, you're getting great practice now because we're all going to be there one day. And yes, that's true. We are all getting older. But there are things that we can do now to help us in the future. And when you look at anything in this world that has ever been controversial on the healthcare plane,
mm-hmm.
we say, well, you know, we're all getting old. You know, we turned out fine. Our kids will be fine. You know, we ate the dinosaur frozen chicken nugget growing up and we're fine. Like, our kids will be fine. But then you want to say, like, are we really? Are we really? And so I think that I just have, like, I applaud your mom for questioning, like, is this really, am I really destined for this? And then is my daughter, like, is Jess then destined for this? What can we do? And in my experience, as I have been dealing with this and seeing the dementia play out in real time in front of me, it is so overwhelming. Overwhelming is the only word that I can come up with. When you start, because what do? We start Googling. What can we do?
And if you weren't worried before you Googled, you will be after.
Yeah. Good luck. Now you're self-diagnosed yourself and you have your death sentence, right?
Yeah.
So tell me, what are the things that someone listening to this and you and I, what can we do? If you had to put a hierarchy of this is the most important to these are things you should consider. And when you mention, you know, the diet, your mom said, like, I got to change my diet. I need to, you know, test my house for mold. All of those things, it's like a total overhaul. And for me, I'm like, I don't even know where to begin. So tell me a little bit about what you have found, you know, in your research of, okay, these are things you can start with.
Yeah.
What has been your research there?
So I will, I'll answer that in a couple parts.
Yes.
Because there are a few things that you said that are really, really important to answer that question. And that's, I think, the first thing that we have to talk about and we have to acknowledge is what do we actually understand to be normal? Because we have this idea, like you said, you know, when people are getting older, you know, I got to die of something. It's all happening. It's coming. You know, we're all getting older. Get ready because it's coming for you next. We have this idea in this country, maybe everywhere, but I know here, that certain things are normal, and we conflate that. We make the error in thinking that it's normal is natural, normal is good, and normal is inevitable. And none of those things are true. Normal is not a constant. Normal is a concept that changes depending on where we collectively fall on average. And over the last, heck, even the last 10 years, 20 years, 100 years, our collective health has really taken some twists and turns. We have modern medicine that's made it possible to live longer than ever, but we're not enjoying that extra time. We have gotten so much sicker over the last, at least the last 50 years, and it's getting worse. So our idea of normal isn't constant. It keeps changing. And we have, and it's like the, you know, the frog in the pot of the boiling water. It doesn't realize it's being boiled alive because it shifts so slowly. And all of a sudden we look around and, you know, the average age of puberty of girls is 5 years younger than, I think it's 5 years younger than when we were going through it. It's, you know, the average onset of dementia, the average onset of someone living with early cognitive decline is 49. It is not 80s. It is 49. That's from Blue Cross Blue Shield. This is not from an alternative website. This is Blue Cross Blue Shield data. The average BMI, the average, you know, obesity is almost the new normal. What we consider normal should be a real wake-up call. We've got to keep an awareness about the fact that we keep moving the marker down the field and not in the right direction. So the first thing we can do is start talking about this idea of normal. It is anything but optimal. And the second thing that we can actually do, and I say that, you know, I am a Bredesen protocol trained coach and fan, and the Bredesen protocol is actually the protocol that I teach, that I'm trained in and that I teach, and that is the way out that we'll talk about in a second. Yes. But I have to disagree with him just a little bit from a coach's perspective. I am a coach. I'm not a doctor. So nothing that I say here is medical advice, but Dr. Bredesen is brilliant and has really dissected this disease and understands it better than he and his colleagues understand it better than anyone. But I think we have to step back a layer because yes, we know the risk factors for the disease, but the number one risk factor for this tsunami of Alzheimer's and dementia in our general population is the belief that it's inevitable. This belief, wow. So I'll say it again. I think the number one risk factor for everyone, every single human being on this planet, especially in America, for dementia, for any kind of dementia, is the belief that there's nothing we can do about it. And I say this as a brain health coach who talks to people every day, and that is the belief, that is the narrative. And the hardest part of my job is getting someone's attention long enough to tell them they have a choice. Because trust me, when you say, hi, I'm Jess and I do dementia prevention, I may as well say, hi, I'm from the IRS. No one wants to talk to you. Everyone says, nah, I don't want to hear about it. I know there's nothing you can do. It's in my family. I gotta die something. I'm just gonna live it up. Don't tell me I have to stop, you know, eating whatever I want to eat or doing anything differently. Like, just don't bother me. And it's sad because that belief system is the biggest driver of why no one speaks up. No one gets help. Everyone just accepts it. And when you kind of look at this concept of learned helplessness, right? You know, prisoners and other, you know, hostage situations, not hostage, that's the wrong thing. Prisoner situation, prisoner of war. when you keep people in an environment where they have no control, no agency, they give up. And you know what? They have a much lower likelihood of making it out alive. And the same thing is true in life. When you give up, you think you have no control, no agency, no choice. Your body and your mind transmit those beliefs and those signals into your biochemistry, and it becomes reality. And that is the most damaging thing.
Yeah.
And it's pervasive. So Dr. Bredesen has done groundbreaking work. But his biggest problem, and this is where I'm working the hardest, is just changing the narrative and getting people's attention that this is not the way it has to be. You have agency, you have choice, and the earlier you start, the better. So that was my really long way of saying the things that we can do. One, talk about it. Like, we've got to start normalizing, just like mental health, which I know you know so well, and this is part of your purpose, is to destigmatize and normalize this notion that there is no normal. And actually, what is perfectly common and normal and good actually is that the fact that we're not all the same, and we all deal with different things, and we all have different ways of managing it, managing the stress and getting through it, right, and thriving. And when it comes to dementia, the best thing we can do to change this over the next couple of generations is to destigmatize the talking about it early.
Yes.
Because the longer you wait, the less impressive the outcome, or the less optimal, the less successful any intervention. I don't disagree. There is no cure. There is no pill that you can take to make it go away. That would be wonderful, but you know, we probably don't have time to get in, and I would put everyone to sleep anyway. But there are so many different contributors to the disease that, you know, the idea that there will ever be, you know, one pill to cure them all is tells me that there is some, you know, willful ignorance about how the disease actually works, what it is. So the good news is that we don't have to wait. There is a way out, but it is hard work. There's no magic pill. So what I would tell everyone, no matter what age you are, the sooner you start, the better. If you have a 6-month-old baby, yeah, by the time they start eating normal food and you're putting personal care products on their bodies, like, that's start now. There is no such thing as too early. This is not an old person's problem. It has become a problem that we only pay attention to in old age. But it is not an old person's problem. The changes that happen in your brain can be detected 20 to 30 years before a diagnosis. That means you and I probably, if you know, I know I am sure I do. I have a genetic risk for it. You could probably pick up changes in my brain right now if I do nothing.
Right.
But what we know is that knowing your risk factors, and that requires some advocacy with your doctors, and sometimes some out of pocket expense, because our healthcare system isn't really on board with prevention.
Oh, I could go on and on.
We are in a system that's designed for acute illness and sickness, and it is a business first and foremost. So it is not meant for health. Doctors are not trained in lifestyle medicine unless they become naturopaths or sometimes some of the DOs, or they do, you know, additional education. It's not part of medical school. It's certainly not part of the insurance system. And the healthcare system just isn't set up for prevention. So, you know, what we find out is that it's up to us. We actually have to be our own best advocates. And talking about it and realizing that this is not an old person's disease. We all carry a risk, and starting to talk about it and do something about it, most importantly, in our 30s and 40s, 50s and 60s, will delay prevent and in some cases reverse the symptoms. So let's talk about what that means. There are seven different areas that we focus on. So when I'm sure everyone has heard, you talk about brain health and someone inevitably tells me, "Oh yeah, I heard you're supposed to eat mushrooms." And not the magic kind. I mean, you can do that too. In fact, there's some really great research on that. And I think it's fascinating. But that's not what I mean. You can eat lion's mane, or take the pills, take the supplements. You should eat a lot of blueberries, eat salmon, eat whatever, avocados. And people just go, yeah, okay. Everyone's got a nugget. Just like every doctor treats a body part, even holistic medicine has their nuggets. Everyone throws, do this one thing for your brain. And I get emails every day that tell me, do this one thing to save your brain. And this is part of this collective short attention span that we've cultivated over the last couple of decades of social media. But that's the big picture with conventional medicine. That's the big picture with functional medicine, and even well-intended brain health experts, coaches. You want to get people's attention, but it's not one thing. It's a lifestyle. So it is what we eat. It is restoring our metabolic health. So rather than loading up on processed food and sugar, which we all do, it is the standard American diet. We prioritize whole foods, reducing the sugar, reducing the toxic load. Our conventional crops are grown with glyphosate, Roundup. And if you think that doesn't go in your food, trust me, even some organic food, even the soil in your backyard, if you grow your own tomatoes, I mean, we are so soaked in toxins and Roundup at this point, which banned in Europe, by the way, but not here. We are basically swimming in this toxic environment. It is everywhere from receipts you pick up at the grocery store to whatever you put on your skin, whatever you clean your house with, molds. We're just surrounded. And then you add on to that we live in a very toxic, sorry, a stressed out society. We're not sleeping. We're increasingly isolated. We're lacking human connection, especially after the pandemic. And we're not exercising as much as we should because we're working so hard and we're sitting at home, stress eating and watching Netflix. So, it's not one thing. It's kind of everything. But if I had to start somewhere, one of the biggest things that you can do, aside from changing your mindset and believing that there's a way out of this, is prioritize sleep, prioritize eating real food. You fix your gut. You fix your the components you're putting into your body, and you give your body the rest and the rest that it needs to restore immune function, to clean out our brains at night with that lymphatic flow. Sleep and a good diet are game changers. You layer from there. Move. It's all important. But I start every single person I work with, I start with sleep because inevitably they will all tell you that they're not sleeping. And the reason they're not sleeping is often diet, lack of exercise, stress, relationships. It's everything. So if you can start to work on one of those from one end, you can meet in the middle from the other end with all the other factors. They all are connected. Just like when we treat a body, you can't connect, you can't treat your endocrine system separately from your brain, your nervous system. They're all connected. So we start knocking down some of the biggest things first, sleep, diet, and then we fine-tune, and then we tweak, and we get a little closer and a little closer and a little closer. And you find out that once you start fixing one thing, the other things follow and they get easier. And they get more, you start to see that kind of crescendo of improving metabolic health, more energy, better moods. you fix some of those neurotransmitter pathways, and things just start to improve faster. So the best thing is that the things that we're doing, that we will do today to preserve or delay, any kind of degeneration of our brains later, is actually what's going to make us look better, feel better, perform better today.
That was so informative. And what comes back to me, are the basics. Sleep, number one. And then your diet and what you're putting in your body. And I know that everything you just told us and, the trainings and certifications that you've done, I'm sure are evidence-based. But what I can tell you, the biggest factor that if I was hearing all of this and I had not been in a position the past several months that I have from caring for my aunt, and she is in a memory care home, so there's about 17 residents. If I were hearing all of this and I had not had this experience caring for her, I don't think I would take it so seriously. But the reason that I do, and what I think is so important that I have seen, you cannot convince me otherwise. So this, out of the 17 residents that are in my aunt's memory care place, what is so wild to me is that every single one of them has the diagnosis of dementia or Alzheimer's, but every single one of them acts completely different. Not one is like the other. So this disease manifests in each person so differently. And then my aunt, who's 83, her best friend, her next door neighbor, is also 83 and is in completely different state. She doesn't have a diagnosis of dementia, and it makes you wonder, like, it's not just age. It's not just the number. It
Not at all.
is lifestyle. It's, I want to sit down with all, 17 residents in that memory care and say, tell me about your life. What was it like? Where did you grow up? What did you grow up around? What was your socioeconomic status? What area did you live in? What was your home like? What foods did you eat? Where did you work? Where did you spend the majority of your adult life? What was your environment? All of those things make such a difference. And it is just wild to me how different this disease can manifest in people. And knowing that there are things that we know now that our older relatives did not know then, and there are things that we can do that make such a difference, that are simple things like sleep or paying attention to the foods that you're eating. And I believe that if you asked anyone, my aunt, for instance, if she were in her right mind, she's not now. If I could go back and say, hey, if you would have made these simple choices differently, you could have a completely different outcome now. I believe wholeheartedly that she would say, prioritize that above anything else because you don't want to end up in this space where your brain is just totally gone. And one thing I want to ask you about, and I've done very surface level research on this, but talk to us a little bit about alcohol and what it does to the brain, because I know it is a big factor.
Yes. If I may back up just a second, because I want to comment on what your experience with your aunt, your great aunt. So one, I will say that prevention is obviously the best, and I love getting in front of people who are our age in their 50s and 60s and have no symptoms. I love that. That gives me so much hope and joy. But I don't want anyone that's listening right now with someone in their family with an active diagnosis to be disheartened, because there is a lot that you can still do in even when you have a full-blown Alzheimer's diagnosis. A lot of it comes down to, like you said, 17 residents, they all have different presentations. Mm-hmm. Our misunderstanding about Alzheimer's is that it's one thing. It's one disease. Mm-hmm. It is not. That's one of the big kind of breakthroughs, is that, you know, if it were one thing, if it were the flu, then coming up with a vaccine or a drug for it would be easy. But it is not. It is the result of a network insufficiency, an imbalance between growth and retreat in your body and your biochemistry. And that can be because of inflammation, toxicity, trophic factors. What I mean by that is like hormone support. Wink, wink, women going through menopause. Vascular issues, traumatic brain injury. So the life, like you said, the life experience of these people gives us so much information about what may be driving it. Did you grow up near an industrial chemical plant? Did you grow up in a country with horrible air pollution, or a part of our country with bad air pollution? You know, did you use toxic, do you use toxic chemicals? I mean, you know, we didn't know that Roundup was bad, and I think all of us were exposed to it and still are. So getting that information is the first step. And if you've got a family member in memory care right now, you know, maybe they were, whatever they did, you know, during their lives, they're probably not going back to work at 85 anyway, or 83, but there is still a lot that you can do to figure out what are the drivers of his or her individual decline and reverse those. It may not turn them back into the person you always know, but it will, you know, if they're nonverbal, we've seen people go from being a zero on the MoCA scale, which is one of the assessments, to improving and being able to speak, to walk, to feed themselves, to have more clarity. So, you know, that's something that, you know, it takes a longer discussion, you know, what you do, what those tests are. But there is a complete battery of tests. It's called the RECODE report. And if you're prevention, it's PRECODE. So prevention of cognitive decline, reversal of cognitive decline. My business is ENCODE. So RECODE and PRECODE are owned by Dr. Bredesen. I named my business ENCODE for encoding, you know, truly integrating the notion of health into our systems, into our habits, but also for end cognitive decline. So you can actually get these lab tests and these reports and cognitive assessments that pinpoint what type of dementia you have, what are your risk factors, and you can scale it back from there. And you know, you can get some improvement even if you've already got a diagnosis. So there's hope. There's absolutely hope, even if you're late stage. But back to your question about alcohol. So, alcohol is a neurotoxin. Yes, we all have been told that it's got, certain qualities that come from the anthocyanins, the antioxidants that are in it that, you know, are supposed to help. The reality is that I don't like to classify food as good or bad. It all depends on what context and what your goals are. When it comes to brain health and alcohol, you know, I'm not talking about cardiovascular health or anything else. Alcohol is a neurotoxin. If you want to do your brain a favor, pass on the alcohol. You don't need it. If you need to get antioxidants, eat more blueberries. It's not an excuse to drink a bottle of wine. Beer, by the way, is you know, a totally different beast, and it is inflammatory. It's going to increase gut permeability, which allows toxins and inflammation to go bananas in your bloodstream. There's really no upside, to be honest, when it comes to brain health. One interesting thing that alcohol does that I don't think people realize is that, you know, when we're talking about sleep being such a foundation of brain health, what happens during sleep, during deep sleep? So you have the first half of the night that's dominated by this non-REM, NREM deep sleep. And that's the stage of sleep that is the slow wave, the delta waves, if that sounds familiar to you or to anyone. That's the stage of sleep that's the housekeeping stage. So that's where our brains will actually contract a little bit to allow the cerebrospinal fluid to flow through. It's called the glymphatic flow, and actually clean out our brains. So you've got what's called neural pruning. So you are your brain is actually going through and deciding, you know, here are the connections that we're using, we're actively using. Here are the ones we aren't, and it's reshaping, it's rewiring, it's consolidating every single night. And in that first half of the night is when you have an activated part of your brain that really drives the deep sleep, drives this cleaning that happens, and actually clears some of the amyloid, the plaques that Alzheimer's is known for. That region is where the plaques tend to accumulate the most. So you have the question: is it the chicken or the egg? Is it that this region of the brain isn't getting the sleep, so it's not activating, and it's not able to clear the amyloid, or is the presence of the amyloid preventing the deep sleep? And what Matt Walker, who's kind of the sleep guru, he wrote Why We Sleep, he and a team of researchers discovered is that it is the lack of the deep sleep that allows for that accumulation. That's the order. So when you drink alcohol at night, what it does is it actually disrupts that deep sleep state. It makes it fragmented and less restorative. So you may take a nightcap, you may drink and think, I go to sleep just fine. You may not remember any of it. You may think you slept just fine. But what we know now from, you know, wearable technology and some of the other wearables is that you do miss out on deep sleep when you have alcohol, especially at night. So I make the joke to my friends. I gave up alcohol. I have an increased genetic risk for the disease. There is no interest for me in continuing to drink. But once in a while, you know, I'll still have a glass of wine. But I joke with my friends and I say, I only drink in the morning, which at least gets someone's attention. And a raised eyebrow. But I do say, you know, it takes several hours for alcohol to clear your system. If you go to bed with alcohol in your system, you are robbing yourself of deep sleep, of that restoration, that neuronal pruning, and that ability to actually clean with cerebrospinal fluid, the CSF, that amyloid that's building in your brain. So it becomes critically important as we hit middle age and later, when deep sleep is actually naturally impacted. That to me is the biggest problem with alcohol. There are many others, but when it comes to dementia, it's that impact on sleep and the fact that it is neurotoxic.
I've never heard it described in that way, and that makes so much sense to understand how it impairs the brain and how it impairs sleep. That makes so much sense. Wow. Tell us how someone can work with you or contact you, and what exactly your services
Well,
are.
like we
Tell us a
I
little bit
think we
about
discussed
that.
before, I'm doing a master class, a kind of a free 1 hour chat this afternoon, and actually 2 more times this weekend about a lot of what we talked about today, which is what do we know about Alzheimer's? What is it? Why isn't there a drug? So I'll actually as soon as that's over, I'll make sure that's available and you can share that. So hopefully by the time this comes out, we'll be able to be able to share that. But later this month, I'm actually launching an online small group coaching where we will go through in a very systematic way, soup to nuts. We will go through all of the elements of the Bredesen protocol: sleep, diet, exercise, brain training, toxins, stress, and I will talk about supplementation. I'm a coach. I cannot give medical advice or supplement recommendations, but I can discuss what we know about how all of them, it can impact brain health. And we're going to go through it, and we're going to add on at the beginning of that my own approach, which is to really get clear about our belief systems, our identity, what are the beliefs and the habits that we have that express those beliefs, that are aligned with those beliefs, that are moving us toward or away from our optimal version of our brains, our bodies, everything. And that's going to start on February 28th. And that'll be again, small group sessions, live groups, just like this. So it's not an impersonal do-it-yourself class. Like, we will talk about everything. We'll go through it all, really build relationships with the other people in the class, because that's one thing my mom said. She said, if you have the right support at home to do this protocol, it can work. But if you don't, if you live alone, as so many people do, or if you just don't have a supportive relationship, it makes such a big difference. And I want to build a community of people where you don't have to have a brother or sister, a supportive spouse. You have people that can walk in the same tracks with you and face the same challenges and help each other, support and get through it and share best practices. So that group will start on February 28th. It is my inaugural cohort, so I'm really excited about it. And if that's not appropriate or that's not, feeling right for someone, I do one-on-one work. Typically work with clients one-on-one, virtually or in person, for about a minimum of 3 months, because this does take time and it is full of challenges. So you really have to commit, and know what, it has to mean something. So it's about 3 months to get going, and often longer. And I also do you'll see my Instagram is Brain Coach Jess, and I share what I can from that. But it's such a short form that it's hard to really get into it and develop those that close relationship that makes the big differences. But I also do kind of one-off, if somebody is out of state. I live in San Antonio, but I visit North Carolina, my hometown, in Nashville quite a bit. And if somebody wanted to work and just say, let's boot camp this, like, let's do a full weekend, you know what? I will travel, or I'll meet you on Zoom and we will do it for the weekend. My biggest priority is changing the narrative and getting more people aware that they have a choice. So I'd love to have more people in my group. I'd love to have more one-on-one, whatever it takes to get more people on track to avoid this is how they can work with me. So my website is encodewellness.com, and you can schedule a consult with me for free on there. You can also register for my class. You can just reach out and email me and say hello, and we start the conversation.
I think that the work you're doing is so important, and your approach to it is like nothing that I have seen before. To first change the narrative, and secondly, get into things that you can do to change the trajectory. And I am so grateful that the care of my aunt was put in my path, because I am able to see how this is a real thing. The aging process is inevitable for every single person listening, whether you are 20, 25, 35, 45, and 50 and on up. Aging is inevitable. How we age is mostly up to us, and having someone like yourself to help us filter out the noise of do this, not this, this is better, this is worse, it is so incredibly just overwhelming. Where our human nature, when we are overwhelmed and we have too much information, we just shut down and we do nothing. But having your, you know, your expertise, I think is so valuable to anyone looking to change the path of their aging. And so this conversation, I believe, is the very beginning of what is going to spark a lot of people's interest and thought process of, I am not destined for this. And that was the light bulb moment for me in taking care of my aunt and thinking, you know, I'm sure I have a genetic predisposition to this. What can I do to mitigate? I think is just so key. And so the work you're doing is incredible. So thank you. And I'm going to put all of the contact information and ways to work with Jess in the show notes, including her Instagram and website. So please check that out and let us hear from you if you enjoyed.
Thank you, Jana. I consider the work that you do a big part of this. So having people like you who get it and know how important it is. I can do this work, but I'm shouting into an abyss. I need, this is all about community. So having you care enough to bring me into your community is the game changer. This is the narrative shift. And I know this is what you're all about too. It's the name of your podcast. It's really changing narratives. So thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Flip the Script, a mental health podcast. I'm your host, Jana Cohn. If you'd like to talk with me one-on-one, I have private sessions available now to book in the show notes. And please, if this episode spoke to you in any way and you want to join me in flipping the script on mental health issues, the best thing you can do is leave a review on whatever platform you're listening from, or take a screenshot of this episode, tag me, and share to your social media. I'd also love to connect with you in the DMs on Instagram at jana.cohn. In the show notes, you can subscribe to my email list and never miss an episode. I'll see you here next time on Flip the Script.